It's time for an all questions answered edition of On Your Money, our reward for making the On Your Money pledge drive goal last week. So we will be taking more calls than usual during the hour and answering more emails. Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 18th. Certified financial planner Kevin McKinley is in our Madison studios this week, and we are giving him the royal treatment because we are pretty sure that he and his mini money book on making the most of your mortgage are responsible for encouraging a whole lot of you to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio during On Your Money last week. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, it's Surf. Joy. It is joy, right?
Yes, it is. Good. And instead of slippers and a pipe, I gave you a Wisconsin Public Radio auto magnet. The limited edition coveted auto magnet is now yours as my thank you for helping us. I think we broke a record in numbers of pledges during a single hour last weekend.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for all of you who did pledge, and for those of you who didn't. We forgive you briefly, but you do have an opportunity to continue to pledge and pledge again or pledge for the first time if you do wish.
That's right. We had 527 pledges at last count,
wow.
Which is the goal, if I remember correctly, was 220 pledges. Mm-hmm. And then I remember you were quite irritated with me when I doubled it to 440.
Yeah, it wasn't for that reason, but yes, I was irritated with you. No, yeah, you're right. And it's your power and your right to do that arbitrarily. I bow and defer to you. So go ahead and do that. I'm so used to it after all these years of working with you, of just your capricious nature of just setting the bar and the finish line and then arbitrarily moving
That's
them.
Right.
So, but people stepped up, and hopefully they're going to get some answers about a big question about what they should do with their mortgage. That was why we put the mini money book together, is because we get a lot of calls and questions about, should I pay my mortgage off? Should I take out a new one? If I take out a new one, what should I do with the money? I'm thinking about buying my first home. It seems like a really good time to do it, but what should I worry about? What should I know? We even have a section in that mini money book about people who are older and say, I don't need to go to assisted living or a nursing home. I like to stay in my house, but I can't invest what savings I have aggressively to try to earn more of a rate of return. We have a complete section there on reverse mortgages. And then finally, there were 10 things that you could do with the mortgage proceeds. Sometimes people say, well, of course, financial advisors want me to tap into my home equity and then give the proceeds to them so I can invest it. I don't agree with doing that in most cases. What I'd rather have people do is use it to pay off other debt, or use it as a very low interest and potentially tax deductible interest loan, and help it protect them in emergencies instead.
By the way, while the Half the Time Pledge Drive has ended officially, it ended it last night at 7 o'clock, and overall we raised almost all the money in half the time. It's not too late to pledge, and you can help pay for the programs that you count on each day. And you can go to WPR.org to make a pledge of any amount. You can also call 888-202-2889. And Kevin, your mini money book on mortgages is still available.
If you pledge at any dollar amount, and the premium costs virtually nothing. Wisconsin Public Radio doesn't pay me to put it together. I put it together, but because it's in a PDF file, it can be emailed or printed out and sent via regular mail. But it's a relatively low cost way to not only participate and so show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio, but to get something back as a thank you for doing it.
And we should get to the many questions from emails and listener calls as possible, because as you promised last week, we will make this an hour jam-packed full of listener questions, and you will provide all the answers. Let's go to the email from Michael first. Michael wants to know the pros and cons of freezing your credit report.
That's a great question, and especially in these times, there are definitely more pros than cons to freezing one's credit report. It is the best protection against ID theft, identity theft. Freezing your credit report means that companies cannot get access to it, and if they can't get access to it, they can't give you, or more importantly, someone else, new credit in your name, unless you already have a relationship with the company. So let's say you have a Citibank credit card. They can still get access to your credit report, but a new company can't do it unless you have a relationship with them or you unfreeze your report.
So how do I do that?
You start with each bureau, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, and you write a letter and you pay a fee. It's usually about $10, and then that allows you to create an account with a PIN number, and it costs you $10 to freeze it the first time. If you need to unfreeze it in the future, it's another $10, and then $10 to refreeze it again. But Wisconsin residents can go to privacy.wi.gov, and there are template letters already there in a Word document, so you can just they're automatically pre-addressed, and the letter, the language, and everything is all set to go, so you can just change the boilerplate name and address and put yours in there and send it along. And again, privacy.wi.gov, and we'll have that website up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
So you think this is a good idea, Kevin?
Absolutely. It's a little bit of a hassle, but it's still, like I said, the most cost-effective identity theft prevention out there. Some people call and say, you know, what about these companies who offer to do this for me? Yes, it's $10 to freeze it and then $10 to unfreeze it, but companies like LifeLock charge $10 to $15 per month just for credit monitoring, and it's a little better than this, but it's a lot more expensive to use a service like that than it is to just do it manually for yourself. And especially in these days, we're reading more and more stories about large amounts of data and information that are stolen, and often it's not even, you know, some nefarious hacker getting into a system. It's some employee leaves a laptop in his or her car, and the laptop is stolen, and all that data is out there. So this is the best way to protect yourself against misuse of your data. And as a matter of fact, people out there who have teenagers or young adults as children or are caring for an older parent, they might want to freeze their credit reports as well to protect them against identity theft.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. You should consult with your own financial advisor prior to making any investment decisions. Kevin McKinley in our Madison studios today on this week after the pledge drive and an all your questions answered edition of On Your Money. And Kevin, you are in Madison for Madison office hours, I presume, and also you are speaking at the Madison Public Library, the Sequoia branch. Is that tonight or
tomorrow night? That's right. The AAII, American Association of Individual Investors, is doing a presentation, and I am speaking at the presentation on Retire Early and Forever. And great group anyway. I really like what they do, and this is the chapter in the Madison and Milwaukee area. But it's free to the public, and if you still can tolerate me after listening to today, you can see me in person, live show, and should take about an hour or so, and hopefully provide some more useful information to people.
Yeah, that's the corner of Tokay and Midvale in Madison, and I know it well because it's practically right across the street from my house. So I might, if I can stay awake until 5:30 p.m. is when check-in is, the presentation at 6. I don't think I can stay awake that long.
Well, so we'll see. and if you can stay awake and make it, we'll all repair to your place for cocktails and dessert afterwards.
Yeah, we'll have a party. Mm-hmm. To the phones we go for Kevin. Joshua in Wales is with us. Hello, Joshua.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I have a question. We have a good bit of term life insurance, and our insurance agent is trying to convince us that we should convert some of that to a whole life or a permanent life policy. And I'm just wondering when the best time is to do that or if that's advisable at all.
How about never? Is that a good time to do it? Yeah. No, you're great. You're right to ask, Joshua. And you sound like a very polite person, but it's amazing how many times we get this kind of question. And the phrase, excuse me, comes up trying to convince, that this person is trying to convince rather than saying, well, here are some options and here's what I think is best, but obviously I respect your opinion. Trying to convince always seems to come up. So I would much rather have you stick with the term that you have. The only people who really should be considering whole life permanent cash value insurance are generally people who have an estate tax issue or a liquidity issue. And those are generally people who have several million dollars in assets or people who are small business owners or farmers who are concerned. If they die, there could be an estate tax issue, and they want the liquidity from permanent life insurance to help offset those estate taxes. Otherwise, most people who have a life insurance need should steer toward lots and lots of term life insurance. The amazing thing, Joy, is that these cash value policies, it's not as bad as it used to be, but many times they're pushed by salespeople. And if people bought the term life insurance in the amount they need, many times the commission the agent would earn on the term life insurance is almost as much as he or she would earn by selling a much smaller cash value life insurance policy. So I'd much rather have people get lots and lots of term life insurance and steer clear of the cash value or whole life or investment or universal policies.
Well, that's pretty clear cut. Joshua, any follow-up?
Well, the only other question then is we have some money that we want to save or invest, and we already max out our IRAs. Where else might we put that money if we weren't going to put it into life insurance?
Do you have at-work retirement plans?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Is there a reason you're not using those?
Well, it's my own business, and it's an IRA, and we do put in as much as we can every year into that.
So it's just a regular IRA? It's not a SEP? It's not a simple?
It's a simple IRA, yeah.
Okay, so you're maxing that out. You might be able to put more money in another type of self-employed retirement plan. I'm guessing you probably could, and so talk with whoever set up the simple for you and see if they can figure out a different kind of plan for it. But otherwise, I would like to see you just set the money aside. Do you have any children, Josh, or not?
I do, yep.
Okay, you might want to look at a college savings plan, like 529, the EdVest plan. That's another way. You don't get a big tax break for it, but it's you can shelter the earnings on it in the future.
Sure. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks very much, Joshua. Sounds like Joshua has it together. Carol in Minocqua is with us now. Hello, Carol.
Hello there. Good morning, both Joy and Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 56 years old, self-employed, with no health care benefits. My retirement investments are very minimal. I have a traditional and Roth IRA with Vanguard. I also have a money market account with them. I owe about $60,000 on my home mortgage and currently have enough in a bank savings account to pay that off. Would I be smart to pay that off, get rid of that monthly payment, or do something different with that money?
Oh, even Joy is shaking her head on this one. She's finally paying attention.
Yeah.
She could, and I'm worried about this because I only have three answers to all questions. So sooner or later they're going to figure this out, and Joy's just going to take over the show completely. No, absolutely not, Carol. And I know it sounds like a good idea, especially when you're not earning any interest on your savings, and the investments that are subject to the stock or the bond market seem very frightening and volatile. But the key phrase in what you brought up to me was, that you don't have health insurance or you don't have access to health care. And I know I'm a small business owner myself, and trying to get health insurance can be very difficult. And even when you can get it, it can be very expensive. So rather than pay it off, if you came to me and said, I will do whatever you tell me to do, Kevin, I would say actually go get a new mortgage, take all the money out of the house now, put it in a savings account, and hope that at 65 or whatever age it is that you finally qualify for Medicare, that money has sat there unused and untouched. But sadly, for many people in your condition, and there are millions of people like you, Carol, not just self-employed people, but people who either lost their job or left their job and say, you know, I can cover my basic expenses and I have more than enough money to live off of. What I can't cover is a $30,000 hip replacement or something, and I can't even qualify for insurance. So it is a crisis in this country. It is something that is going to get worse before it gets better. And so I'd much rather have you have more cash on hand so that if something happens to you, the worst case scenario, you can go to the healthcare provider and say, what's this going to cost? And would you take a check for 70% of the amount that you just told me this is going to cost?
Okay.
All right. Good luck to you, Carol. Thanks for calling. We are answering all of your personal finance questions during this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine, along with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley. And we have one open line now at 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC. And as promised, because we reached our On Your Money goal last week, far exceeded our On Your Money goal last week, Kevin is devoting the entire hour to answering your personal finance questions as a reward for your support for On Your Money. And by the way, if you still want to pledge, there is still time to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio at WPR.org, and you will see that the freemium or the thank you gift, the mini money book on making the most of your mortgage, is still available as a thank you if you make a pledge now. And Trish and Nina is with us. Hello, Trish.
Good morning, Joy and Kevin.
Morning.
It's a pleasure to speak to you. Never miss your program, Kevin. I absolutely love it. So here's my question. getting a small disbursement from my parents' estate within the next 2 to 3 months. I'm 55. I have no 401k, no health insurance, no life insurance. So I know that I'm going to open a Roth IRA, obviously, but I want to know what some of the options I might have. And then I also would like to know if you have any suggestions for a socially responsible or green investment, a mutual fund or something, where I know that the money is being invested in a way that would, you know, meet with my ethics.
Yep. Well, first of all, Trish brought back a hallowed tradition on Your Money, Joy, which I think we should fire up again, which you are
false
much
praise.
More likely to get your question answered and your call taken if you lead off the question with false praise of the show in general, but I prefer if you lean towards praise of me particularly.
You throw me in, then I'll keep you on longer.
Yeah, that's too, right. So. Joy really runs the board here, so you're going to want to say something nice about her. Trish, I'm sorry, did you say you were working?
Yes, I am. I work about 30 hours a week and I have no benefits through my job.
Okay. You are exactly right. The Roth IRA is the way to go. You can open up one just about wherever you want, a bank, a credit union, a financial services office. If you're interested in mutual funds and you're comfortable kind of guiding this yourself, I would check out a place like Vanguard or Schwab or Fidelity and see what they can do for you. They can really do a lot now at a relatively low cost for most people. And then in terms of socially conscious funds, many of these companies do have socially conscious funds that they offer. One concern that I have about these is generally the expenses for socially conscious funds are higher than a similar, let's say, non-socially conscious fund that one doesn't invest with any specific guidelines or doesn't try to adhere to some principles or philosophy. But there are more and more of them out there. For the Roth IRA, you can definitely find one at these sites. And I think Pax World is still one of the largest ones, Parnassus, and even Vanguard has several of these socially screened funds. The question is, you know, what are you concerned about? I've had people in the past who've said that I want socially conscious funds, and I've given them a couple different options, and they said, no, that's exactly the opposite of what I want. And I said, yes, one person's socially conscious is another person's abomination. So I would screen each one for it. We'll put a link up to the website at onyourmoney.com later today, Trish, that will give you a good listing of some of those funds and what different criteria they use to screen for. But just go to onyourmoney.com hopefully later this afternoon and we'll have that up for you. But the Roth IRA and the bank is the best way to go. And I think your philosophy is exactly right. And you obviously listened to the show because you knew what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Trish. Good luck to you. And Joe in Duluth is with us now. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Hey, I want to thank you guys and thank Kevin for helping people out. My wife lost her job about 3 years ago, and I've been ever since she lost her job. You know, we've been trying to make it on my wages, and keep going into debt every year. The credit card's a little bit higher.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Do you feel, Joe, have you analyzed where that credit card debt is coming from? Which specific expenses are incurring that debt?
Well, it's just daily living expenses. You know, food and bills we have. Right before she got fired, they ended up closing her whole department at the company she worked for. And right before that, they had promised her, they'd given her a 6% raise and did a bunch of, you know, said, well, we got this spot for you, blah, blah, blah. And then the very next month, they cut her whole department.
Okay. Well, I would say a couple things. I would like to see if you could break down every single expense of where that's going. And sometimes that's painful, but it's a very necessary step at this point. And go through that and say, what can we live without? Where is this going? And how can we cut back so that we're not getting further into debt? And once you identify those expenses that really are urgent, that are basic and required, I would actually give yourself enough cash from your checking or savings account so that you're only spending, you're not tempted to use the credit card. And then after that, if you find that it's mere a matter of temptation rather than actual need, tear up the credit cards or put them in a jar of water and put the jar of water in the freezer so it at least gives you some time to think about if you need it. And finally, you may have to just look at a different lifestyle. Do you own your own home right now, Joe? Okay. Do you have a mortgage on it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. is actually the American response to that right now. So there's nothing wrong with that. Do you have any established home equity within the home?
Yeah, but the problem is that if we go to take more, because I tried to get a lower rate to refinance.
Right.
But with the reduced home values now, we'd end up having to pay mortgage premium insurance, and I'm not willing to pay more.
Oh, yeah, except I would definitely do that because the cost, the PMI, the private mortgage insurance that you would have to pay is probably way lower than the interest that you're paying on this accumulating credit card debt. So I would definitely want you to do that. But again, only if you can force yourself to stop using a credit card to keep funding your lifestyle, if you can. And again, that's hard to do because
you're saying if I'm going into debt every year, I should cut my spending.
Yes, first and foremost, and that is the best way to do that.
That's pretty common sense, right, that you do that pretty much?
Except you'd be surprised how often that common sense escapes a lot of us, especially in times of stress.
And in government, too. I mean, government, aren't we like $1.6 trillion nationally in debt every year?
But Uncle Sam has a very good rate on his credit card, and so he actually gets points too. A lot of people don't know that he gets miles for his charging. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, you're right. That's a bigger issue. But your issue is more about trying to identify what you're spending, see if there's a way to cut back, and if you can, try to refinance your mortgage once you agree to stop going further into debt.
Yeah, Joe, thanks very much for the call, and good luck. We'll save the other issue for another hour. And Shelley in Beloit is with us now. Hi, Shelley. Oh, Shelley must have hung up. We got her ring there instead. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. We did get an email, Kevin, from Vanna, who says she is being pushed into invest into a market-linked CD, and she wanted to know what you thought of them, what are they, and should she invest in one?
You really get your share of M-words on this show with the McKinley Money, Mini Money book, On Your Money.
And I mumble through them.
Market-linked. These are generally... they're actually not a bad idea in the right circumstance. What they are is they are certificates of deposit, usually FDIC insured, but they're tied to a market index like stocks or commodities or bonds. And then, in theory, the value of the CD rises according to the performance of the underlying index. And if you hold it into maturity, you'll get your money back. It's generally capped in terms of appreciation, meaning even if, you know, let's say it's tied to the S&P 500, the S&P 500 might go up 30% in a year. You only might make 8% of that. But again, after the term, it's usually 5 to 7 years. In theory, you get your money back, and in the meantime, it's FDIC insured.
Well, that doesn't sound too bad.
No, as long as Vanna might not need the money between now and the time that the CD is scheduled to mature. But the problem that I have with these is this is an okay idea if it's an alternative to investing in the stock market. Many times, though, people approach us with these questions saying, I had my money in a five-year CD paying 4%. Now the bank is encouraging me to do this. I don't like jumping out of a very fixed, very boring, very liquid investment like a CD into this type of extremely complex investment. If the advisor is doing what's right, he or she has given Vana a 70-page prospectus probably describing all the ins and outs of these, and they can be very complex. It does give you some of the upside, but less of the downside of the stock market or the underlying index. There may also be some tax implications that might be hard to decipher if it is held outside of a retirement account. So she should make sure she understands both the costs, the risks, and the implications of putting the money into this before she goes ahead and agrees to do it.
Yeah, and I don't like that she feels she's being pushed. I mean, what do you advise if you think you know, your brother-in-law or an investment advisor of some sort is pushing you to invest?
Do you know my brother-in-law? Because he can be very pushy.
I know mine.
There is no investment out there, and there are very few times in life when you have to do something by a certain deadline, especially putting money into something, you know, other than, you know, deadlines for tax reasons, like an IRA contribution or for the calendar year. But generally, when people are driven on a commission basis for it, many times people who earn commission from selling these investments are doing the right thing. They really do believe it's a very good thing for the client. But when there's a commission involved in it, there's some incentive. And the incentive can sometimes act as a perverse driver for the people trying to offer these things to clients. So I would always ask people in that situation, what are you getting paid on this? And what, more importantly, what am I paying for the expenses of doing this for it? And if you're satisfied with the answer, you think it's worth it, go ahead and do it. But if not, you know, doing nothing sometimes is preferable to doing something.
This is an all questions answered edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and Tim in Wautoma is next. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Hello.
You got me?
We got you.
Okay. Always enjoy this show, especially with Mike's humorous side added to the logical, helpful advice, even though I haven't needed it before. My question is, I'm a retired teacher living on my retirement, my Social Security, and currently teaching part-time as well for a small extra bit. I have no savings because of a divorce, cleaned out everything else I had, and I am trying to refinance my mortgage. I've been paying $1,034 a month. A different bank than I've been with is offering me a new mortgage, but right now I owe $136,000 approximately on the mortgage. I'm paying over 6%. They are saying between 4.125 and 4.25 on a 30-year. And they added a $5,000 amount in to pay for this year's property tax as an escrow. And then apparently I would be getting that back in December. But that pushes the total refinance up to $144,000. And I'm wondering if I want to do that. My new payment would be $710. My object is to try and put some savings together.
Yeah, I not only think I'm glad you're considering this, and I'm glad you called, and I think it's a great deal. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tim. You're going to have to pay that escrow payment amount one way or the other, right?
Well, yeah, I'll have to pay the taxes.
Yep, you got to pay the taxes. And so they just want that up front, and you can ask the lender if it's possible to take the escrow out of it, but you're going to pay it sooner or later. The rate is phenomenal, especially for a person who is technically retired and mm-hmm. earning a smaller amount of income and doesn't have a lot of other liquid assets. So I would jump on this, and I would do it for the 30 years rather than the 15. Many times people are tempted to go with the 15, but you're way better off going with the 30-year and keeping more flexibility, and especially in your situation. So call the bank or credit union today, Tim, and say, thank you very much. I will take this and take the escrow out, and we'll do everything else and move forward with it. In your situation, it sounds like a very important step and something that really will make a difference for you and your life going forward.
Okay, this is exactly what I needed because I told the guy at 4 o'clock yesterday that I'd get back to him today.
Yep.
Well, what great timing. I'm glad you were able to call.
Yeah, he actually called me and said, I will pledge $25 to Wisconsin Public Radio if you tell Tim this when he calls, okay?
Tim, exactly. Good luck to you. That's great.
No, I needed the help. I don't have anybody else to talk to about these sorts of things. You know how it's always kind of nice to chat it over with your spouse or something, but I don't have that.
Well, we are glad that you were able to call in.
And, we are here.
Yeah, thank you so much, and good luck to you. Now, that sounded, I hadn't heard that before. It sounded like the bank was really trying to court him with this, hey, we'll throw in the $5,000 escrow.
It's usually just a case of trying to make sure that that payment actually goes through. And it's common. It's no indication of what they actually think about Tim. I'd just say, look, it's one thing to say, well, we're going to throw a 2 points fee on for this or something, but he was going to pay that property taxes whether or not he gets the new mortgage or not, so he might as well just, if that's what they want to get the deal done, go ahead and do it.
All right. Tim, thank you for calling, and much luck. Now we go to Mike in Ridgeway. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Well, the question that I have actually has to do with my kids. I recently opened an IRA for my daughter, who is 11, and I think from past shows, you've said that that's a pretty good vehicle. Now that I've done it, I'm sort of second-guessing for savings for college, and if not college, which is a possibility, just before retirement. Is that a good idea, or would a different savings mechanism be better?
Why are you second-guessing it?
I don't know.
Okay, because
we do these things.
Because we have first-world problems that when we say, Jess, should I have done the Roth IRA or not? Did the kids have earned income, correct, Mike?
It's a little bit. It's been there's been some overtime, and it's been this money that she got was actually from a study that she was involved in.
Okay,
so what I want to do then is continue have something that I continue to put money into for her.
Okay,
and so go ahead. I mean, what do you is that? Did I do the right thing? I guess that's. I just want to between my wife and I want a reassurance, and you are the go-to guy for information financially. So.
I really am. It's come to that, isn't it? What are we, 7 billion people we're in the world now, and it's just me here. And we only have an hour every Tuesday, so it's hard to get all the calls
you
in.
You are a trusted advisor.
Right, which is a sad comment on all of us. Mike, one concern I have, and I just want to make this clear, not just for you, but for the listeners. Children can have Roth IRAs, but children need to have legitimate earned income on which to base that contribution. And it can't be, well, I paid them $1,000 to sit in front of and watch the Disney Channel for 12 hours straight, unless it was part of a study. So I want to make sure that they have legitimate earned income that, in theory, would be taxable. Now, many times it's not actually taxed because the dollar amount is so low. So that's the first hurdle to get over. But yes, I do think Roth IRAs are great for children if they do meet that that standard of having that legitimate earned income. The second thing about it is that Roth IRAs, generally even owned in children's names, do not count against need-based financial aid awarded at the federal level in college. But if the money is needed for college, you can always pull the contributions out of any Roth IRA at any time for any reason, with no questions, no problems, no taxes, no penalties whatsoever. So if the kids do need the money down the road, they can pull the contribution portion back out of the Roth IRA. And because they're hopefully going to leave it in there for a long time, 5 decades in some cases, it can grow to be a substantial amount, and even more than the dollar amount of what that might be worth. What I think is going to happen is I've seen children who have no interest in saving, no interest in money, no interest in long-term planning, and they see their parents doing something that, no, we've just done something for you that we think is going to pay off for you in 5 decades. They start to pay attention to it and start to see, oh, okay, maybe I should be doing this. And if they can turn $1,000 into $5,000 or $10,000 when I'm 60, that's a lot of money, and maybe I should try to look into that myself.
Yeah. So are you reassured, Mike?
Yes, I am. The other quick question actually stems from what you said about earned income. Money put in there has to be, in essence, somehow earned. So, like lawn care, if she works for the neighbor, that has to be, or that it could be that sort of income.
Absolutely.
It can't just be a gift from us.
Cannot be a gift. It has to be legitimate earned income.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC. And Kevin is here to answer all of your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley, and this is an all questions answered edition of On Your Money. Kevin promised at the end of the show last week that if we reached our goal, he would devote the entire hour to answering your personal finance questions. And we met the goal. Let me tell you, it was a record-breaking hour. Thank you so much for your support. The goal was 220. I doubled it to 440, and we ended up getting 527 pledges during last week's On Your Money program, and that's just fantastic. And it's still not too late to pledge. We are still accepting pledges at WPR.org, and you'll see that you can still pick up Kevin's mini money book on mortgages if you'd like that with your pledge.
Yep, and there's a lot of information. We're obviously seeing a lot of calls about this already, and it. The majority of mortgage activity right now is not people buying new homes. It's people saying, gosh, I'm at 5.5%. I almost paid this off, but man, I could really use the extra money. And to go down to 4%, buy myself a lower payment, some extra cash, this is something I should do. And I definitely think you should do it. I think you should for sure consider it and reject it rather than saying, well, I don't want a new mortgage. The only people who should avoid getting the new mortgage by choice are people who say, you know what, I have so much money set aside that any emergency that could possibly come up, I can write a check for it. But otherwise, it's a good idea to looking at getting this now, because it is actually safer to have the mortgage and the money than it is to have no mortgage but no money.
And Kevin also is in Madison today. He has offices in Madison and Eau Claire, and he will be speaking tomorrow night at the Madison Public Library, the Sequoia branch of the Madison Public Library, which is on Tokay Boulevard in Madison. He will be talking about how to retire early, Kevin, or something along
that? Retire early and forever, something for people of all ages who say, you know what, I want to make sure that I'm doing this right. I want to know all the steps of how to save along the way, how much I need to retire, how I can tell if I'm on track. A lot of people say, well, I'm 45, but I want to make sure I've done everything at 45 that I should be doing so that I can retire at 60 or 65, rather than finding out at that point that, oh, shoot, I should have been doing this for the last 15 or 20 years.
So that is tomorrow night, Wednesday night at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And we have lots of callers and lots of emails. Let's go with this email from an anonymous homeowner who asks, is it really worth it to go from a 15-year mortgage at 3.857% to a 30-year mortgage at 4%?
Well, no, as long as none of these things happen to that homeowner over the next 30 years. Interest rates rise, home values decline, lending standards become more restrictive. The homeowner needs to buy something big like a car or pay for home improvement or pay for someone's college or pay for medical expenses that aren't covered or just has some personal need for cash from the home but can't get a new 4% mortgage for what the loan would be at this point. But if any of those things happen, then it is a good idea to switch from a 15-year 3.875% mortgage to a 30-year 4% mortgage.
Even with extra interest costs associated with the longer loan?
It's a very small price to pay for access to the cash, and especially when the interest rates are this close. Many times, you know, the interest rates for a 15-year might be 0.5% lower than they are for the 30-year mortgage. But the minimum payment for 15 years is much higher. It's you know, for a $100,000 mortgage, a 4% loan is going to be about a $470 a month payment. On a 30-year, if you go to a 15-year at 3.875%, it's about $735. So it's substantially more. If the person takes out the 30-year mortgage at 4% and then makes the payment that would have been required on the 15-year at 3.875%, he or she will still pay that loan off in about 15 and a half years. But if for whatever reason something comes up where it makes sense to slow the payment down, the homeowner has the option to do that, make a lower payment, and put the money elsewhere.
So does he go just for what he owes on the house or the whole shebang?
I would actually go for the whole shebang, and I doubt there will be a box that says on the mortgage application, do you want the whole shebang? If that box is on there and the word shebang is using, you probably want to find a new lender. But yeah, get the new mortgage for about 80% of the loan to value, and that will help you avoid having to pay private mortgage insurance.
I think it should say shebang, but that's
I like
okay.
Shebang.
Jim in Columbus is with us next. Hi, Jim.
Hey, you might have just answered the question, but I'm 54 years old. My IRA, I got a little IRA and a simple 401k that, you know, beats the hell out of me every year. There's less than $40,000 in there. I've got a home with a lot of equity, and I've refinanced, you know, several times. Most recently last year, I didn't have a perfect credit rating, but in that refinance, I got rid of a lot of revolving credit, and I think now I've got as good a credit rating maybe as I can hope for. I'd like to refinance, but at 54, you know, going for a 15, 20, or 30, my biggest concern, I guess, is, you know, retiring and still have 15 more years of payments. Am I worrying about the wrong thing there? Because
is he worrying about the wrong thing?
Yes, you are worrying about the wrong thing. What you should be worrying about is the specter of death haunting us all.
there you go.
And once you solve that, Jim, then you should be worrying more about having a lot of your net worth tied up into this paid-for home, especially in retirement, when even for a serial refinancer like you, it's going to be difficult to get a new mortgage at that time if something should come up. And so what I would rather have you do is get the 30-year mortgage now for as much as you possibly can. Use any proceeds as a savings account. Maybe make a contributions to a pre-tax retirement account at work. That will help cut your taxes. And then the great thing about mortgages is you can always pay them off whenever you feel like, and there's generally no penalty to do that. So if you get to retirement, you got more cash than you know what to do with, you can channel it over to that mortgage, pay it off, and be done with the payments. But if you, for whatever reason, need that money, it's going to be very nice to have that in place so that you can just pay it off slowly. I'm guessing your Social Security check is probably going to cover that mortgage payment, and that allows you 30 new days to stay in your home and figure out where the next mortgage payment is going to come from.
Okay. Well, I think that I meet the guy on Wednesday. I think that kind of tells me what I ought to do.
Man, everybody's meeting a guy. There's a guy everywhere.
I love it. Yeah. And I love that they're getting in to get the trusted financial advice of Kevin McKinley before they meet their guy. When you say you can put the proceeds of this 30-year mortgage in a savings account, how does that work?
Well, the bank says to you, let's say you have a $200,000 home, we're going to give you a $160,000 mortgage, and you have $100,000 left on your old mortgage, so you've got $60,000. And I am not a fan of trying to outrun the rate of return on the mortgage, because there is no guaranteed investment out there that pays 4% every single year for 30 years. 30-year treasuries pay about 3.5% right now, so almost, but I don't suggest you put it into a 30-year treasury. I'd rather have you put it into a CD or a savings account, and where it will be there for emergencies, and the difference in the interest that you earn is really the cost of having access to that cash. If you are working and you can make more of a pre-tax contribution or a contribution to a pre-tax retirement plan like an IRA or a 401k or a 403b, that's a great place for that money, because for most people, every dollar that they get into that plan saves them 20 to 30 or 40 cents in taxes right now. So that's the best place for the money if you're not going to keep it in a savings account.
Yeah. All right. I like that. Joe in Madison. Hi, Joe. What's your question?
Hi, I'm a recent graduate of UW-Madison. However, I'm an older student, so I'm 30 years old. And I've got about $70,000 in student loan debt. 40% of that was kind of irresponsibly accrued by myself, so school wasn't that expensive. And I'm wondering if I should, when my loans come due in March, if I should try to move them up to 30-year loans, or if I should keep them at 10-year loans and hope that inflation will kind of offset the cost of the extra interest, and my potential earning power later on in life will help out with that.
Well, first of all, Jill, I like that you are you're coming clean on your responsibility for your ways. That's part of the reason you get to be young. And second of all, I wish that I were at the point in my life where 30 was considered older for anything other than playing in the Little League.
Congratulations, Jill, on that.
Congratulations. I like your attitude about the longer term. The longer term just buys you so much more time and freedom. And yes, the interest dollar cost is higher, but you're really in a transition phase in your life. And many people who were in their 20s and were looking to go back to school didn't do it because they said, oh, I'll be 30 by the time I graduate and I'll have all this debt. No, you did the right thing, and especially if you can maximize this degree. But until you get your really solid employment and your earnings, again, generally you can always pay those loans off at some point in the future if the interest is a cost and you do have the money. But if you don't have the money, it'll be so nice to have that lower payment and keep current on those while you figure out what you're going to do with this next stage in your life.
Well, I currently make about $50,000, so, and I've been at the job for about 5 years. So I don't know if that would change your answer at all. And then I'm also curious what you think about graduated plans where they start you out with an even lower payment, and then every 2 years they incrementally raise the payment.
I'd rather have you put inflation on your side with the same fixed rate payment all the way, unless there were some issue where you just don't have enough money right now to even cover living expenses. Stick with the fixed rate and fixed payment. Know it's always going to be there, but know that it's never going to rise.
Thanks very much, Joe, and good luck to you. Again, congratulations. Natalie in Madison? Go ahead. Hi. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, and of course, Kevin, I love you. Enjoy.
You're very welcome, Natalie.
Very, very trusted sources. I'll preempt my question with that. My partner and I are probably now about $10,000 to $20,000 under in our mortgage, meaning just the house lost value. Mm. we probably are paying about 6.5% on the mortgage, and I'm wondering if there are any programs on the horizon or current programs that would help refinance for people in our situation.
Okay, is there some other issue driving the refinancing need other than saying, hey, we'd like to get a lower rate on the mortgage than what we're currently paying?
We'd love to get out of our house. Hmm. We have a baby now, and it's small, and
the baby?
Yeah.
Yep.
The baby is small. Good. Baby should be
so
small.
So is the house, I think.
Right. The baby is actually very large. Okay. The house is small.
Which is kind of the problem. If for looking to get out of the house, I'm not sure about that. There are some problems that will help you basically walk away from that, but it's very difficult to do and it's very painful, and the benefit to you of doing that is probably not worth the stress and the cost. If you're looking to stay in the house or trying to stay in it, there may be some programs. I've heard rumblings that there might be some programs coming down which will not only help the bank out that lent you the money in the first place, but help homeowners out as well, refinance when they're underwater. So that might temporarily assist you in trying to build more equity back into the house if you can. But otherwise, I've even seen this in the paper and online at Madison.com. There have been several different seminars in the Madison area on trying to help people in your situation and what to do. There are a couple government programs. If you go to HUD.gov, there's counseling sessions available to people in your situation. You can go online, and it's a government-sponsored counselor, so you don't have to be worried about sold something, but I would check with them and see if they have an option for you. Have you talked to a lender yet at all?
We have not. We just assumed that, we wouldn't qualify for anything.
Yeah, I would let them say no. And even if they say no, I would walk down the street to the next place. If the bank doesn't say what you want, go to the credit union and find out. And if the credit union says something that you don't agree with, go to a different credit union. But check your credit scores first, and then go to the bank and let them say no first before you self-select yourself out of the process.
Well, Kevin, we had a lot of calls on mortgages this week, and a lot of this information is in your mini money book.
Yep, that's correct. Making the most of your mortgage, and you can pledge any amount by going to WPR.org. Still, even though technically the pledge drive ended last night, you can still get the mini money book by going to WPR.org.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if we can surpass that outstanding record of 527 pledges. I think we will after people heard the program today. Kevin, thanks very much for
Thank
being
you,
here.
Joy.
Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.